Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed, Unfiltered. This is our weekly episode where Meethal Collin and I cover the news and interesting things in criminal justice, law, true crime that have caught our attention. Rabia here, and as always, I'm joined by Collin and Meethal. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing well, yeah.
I think we've been missed.
Have we? We've been dark for a couple of weeks, and people were not happy about that.
We're back.
We're back. But, you know, a girl's got to take a break. So does a guy. But, you know, nobody's actually ever taking a break. We've been working behind the scenes the whole time. That's just how it is. We just haven't been on air. But a lot's happened in the last few weeks while we've been gone, including, like, I continue to see, oh, my gosh, so much content still created about Lindsay Clancy. And, of course, we got to, like, start by talking about how that kind of all has come to a head, which is that I believe it was declared a mistrial, right? Yeah, because
it was hung jury.
Yeah. Collin, do you know, I have not gotten a chance to look at, like, has it been reporting about which way the jury hung, I guess?
Yeah, it was 11 jurors in favor of a not guilty finding, lack of criminal responsibility.
I knew it.
Based upon postpartum psychosis, there was one holdout juror.
Okay.
And the other jurors reported this juror to the judge and said, he's expressing doubt, but he's refusing to enter a not guilty verdict. And so the defense wanted this juror brought before the judge to be interrogated. Usually it's the other way. Usually it's jury nullification where a juror is saying, despite the evidence pointing towards guilt, I refuse to vote guilty. And so that's an appealable issue that's being appealed now about whether the judge should have questioned this juror and seen whether he was refusing to follow the juror's oath.
Yeah. And this was a jury of majority women, I believe, as
yes,
well.
Yes,
right?
84.
Yeah,
something
like that. So that's what when I first saw the headline, I was like, I'm guessing that's the way it swung. And I also thought there's going to be one holdout that is going to be a man. I just knew it. So what does this mean? Then she'll be going back to trial.
Well, so the interesting thing is, defense, both the prosecutor who is stating overconfidence in the case after the verdict and defense counsel are making weird comments. Defense counsel has asked Trump to pardon Lindsay Clancy, which A, she wasn't convicted, and B, it's a state level charge and Trump can only pardon federal inmates. And so I'm not sure if he's just trying to like do PR messaging, but like the law there is all wrong.
Yeah, that worries me in terms of his competence. And also maybe he needs somebody to manage his PR. Okay, and what is the prosecution saying? We got this.
Yeah, they're saying the evidence clearly points towards her killing
jurors,
and murdering
dude.
Her children, and they're not backing down, at least yet.
Wow. Okay, well, I mean, unless they come to trial with a very different looking case, they're going to end up probably with a similar result. They're probably just going to fight having that many women on the jury, but still, crazy. Any thoughts there, Meethal?
No, I was just thinking about, we actually had a call from a listener, a SpeakPipe message, where they were saying, did Lindsay Clancy's trial get all this coverage because she's white? Because there's a case, I think, out of New England of a black woman who got like 30 plus years. Same situation in terms of postpartum. Mm. And I don't know that much information around it, but it's, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, if and when this goes back to trial, it's just like, what else are you prosecution going to present? Like, you know, it seems pretty straightforward that she did her best to try and get help and support and all the things. But here we are. You know?
Yeah. I don't know how they could change the set of facts at this point to make them more favorable for themselves. I cannot disagree with a caller that, yeah, that might be a factor as to why this is getting this much attention. We know this happens over and over again. Young white women, whether they are a victim or they're a defendant in this case, for you know what I mean? And I think she's seen as a victim in this, and I do think she's a victim in this for different reasons. But yeah, I mean, I can't disagree. And you know, look, there's always got to be some true crime case that's grabbing all the attention and propelling all the content making. And I would say that 9.5 times out of 10, it's going to be at the heart of it. It's a white person, you know, for whatever reason. So, all right. Well, let's see what happens next in that. I've got thoughts. I have not made any social media in a while about it, but I might be recording something today.
Is there any timing to it in terms of like when the next step is going to occur?
I mean, it could go back to trial quite quickly, I believe.
Yeah, it gets complicated when there's a mistrial about the speedy trial protections, and I'm not sure about Massachusetts law in particular. So this could drag out, I think, a while. I'm sure they'll offer a plea deal too.
I mean, you think so?
I think they will. Yeah, I mean, I don't think she'll take it, but I don't know what her financial situation is, but I'm sure they'll offer that to try to avoid a retrial.
Well, listen, in this situation, I'm guessing, I mean, this has been an incredible boon for her attorney. He is like a hero online right now. I'm guessing he'll be like, I can do this pro bono. I got you. If they have to go back to trial. All right. So let's start off with what we want to talk about. How about we start with you, Colin, this week?
Yeah. And so this returns to the topic you just mentioned of bad lawyering. And also the law may be applying differently for people of certain race, gender, et cetera. So this is a case out of Mississippi. The Court of Appeals of Mississippi just handed down their verdict last week. And so I'm going to read from the opinion the basic facts of the case. This was on January 7th, 2024. Canton police in Mississippi were dispatched to Boyd Street after receiving a report that shots had been fired. Upon arrival, an officer was directed to a back room where he encountered Derek Mack suffering from a gunshot wound to his abdomen. The officer called for medical assistance and stepped outside to gather information. As the officer gathered information, a second gunshot victim, Derek's son, Quindarius Mack, approached him, explaining the events leading up to the shooting. Derek later succumbed to his injuries. Quindarius stated the shooting began with an argument over money between him and the next-door neighbor, Michael Marment. At first, the two exchanged words in the street. Then things got physical, at which point Derek attempted to intervene. Quindarius said that at some point after that, Mormon's stepson, this is the defendant, Ron Telvin Richardson, came out of the house with a gun. According to Quindarius, he tried to talk to Richardson, but Richardson started shooting at him and his father and chased them behind their home. And so ultimately, we have this defendant, Mr. Richardson, charged with murder, among other crimes. Two interesting things here. So first of all, and this gets to the point about the law maybe applying differently for different people, Richardson tries to claim a standard ground, a Castle Doctrine defense, claiming I was not the first aggressor. I was in a place I was lawfully entitled to be. And the trial judge says, well, there's no evidence in the record one way or the other about who is the first aggressor. And so as a result, you can't claim self-defense and stand your ground because of the absence of evidence. And so part of the ruling by the Court of Appeals of Mississippi is to say, that's wrong. I mean, going back to our standard of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, if we don't know who the first aggressor was, absolutely we can present to the jury, you might have not been the first aggressor.
Yeah,
and you were
defense.
Entitled to stand your ground.
Yeah.
The more interesting part, and this has split the court, and so there's a majority opinion in dissent, and I'm sure the Supreme Court of Mississippi is going to take this, and this is the really disturbing and troubling part to me, and this has echoes of my most recent series of Amanda Lewis. Mr. Richardson is represented by an attorney named Dexter Woodbury. Mr. Woodbury is suspended from the practice of law before Richardson's case. This involves a case that had multiple allegations against this attorney in connection with the workers' compensation matter, commingling funds with his personal accounts, conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice, etc. But here's what happens. We have a hearing with the prosecutor, the judge, and this defense attorney, and they all agree, even though Mr. Woodbury, you're suspended from the practice of law, to allow you to represent Mr. Richardson at his murder trial, and we're not going to tell him that you've been suspended from the practice of law. And so,
is he an appointed public defender? Is that what's happening?
I think he is appointed counsel, but I don't think he's a public defender.
Okay.
So I think it's, a court-appointed attorney in the case.
Okay.
And so just last week, a majority of the Court of Appeals of Mississippi says, no, I mean, this is in violation of Mr. Richardson's rights to not inform him and allow him to make an informed decision. Meanwhile, the dissent says, Supreme Court of Mississippi is allowed to make these types of decisions to allow a suspended attorney to represent a murder defendant. And so I think the Supreme Court of Mississippi had this in their prerogative. And there's no problem with Mr. Richardson being in the dark that his attorney had been suspended based upon conduct detrimental to his clients.
Every business owner hits a point where they need more expertise than they can handle alone. But another full-time hire isn't always the answer. Undisclosed hit this point when we realized we need to hire a grant writer. And so Upwork is the place that I went to look for the right freelance grant writers to help us continue our work. Upwork helps growing businesses find highly skilled freelance specialists, not just for one-off tasks, but to build an entire team at a fraction of the cost and without the commitment of a permanent headcount. Upwork gives your business fast access to highly skilled specialists with deep expertise so you can fill critical skill gaps, launch projects faster, and scale support up or down without committing to a full-time headcount. You can browse profiles, review their past work, look at the reviews and the testimonials, and get help scoping the role so you can hire with confidence and get started quickly. And with Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork. AI-powered shortlisting delivers a curated shortlist of top freelancers matched to your goals in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Upwork also cuts down operational hassle by handling things like contracts and payments in one place so you can spend more time running the business. Thousands of growing businesses already trust Upwork to hire highly skilled freelance professionals for everything from one-off projects to ongoing support. With over 170,000 freelancers holding 5-star ratings, you can hire with the confidence that comes from hiring someone with a verified track record. It is free to sign up, and posting a job is easy. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
And so I'm sure this will go up to the Supreme Court of Mississippi, but I mean, you know, Rabia, starting with you, I mean, what is your thought about what they did in this case to not tell the defendant that his own attorney had been suspended?
I mean, come on. What could my thoughts be? This is, I mean, it is atrocious, egregious, incomprehensible to me that anybody who is an officer of the law, and I include the judge in this, an officer of the court could believe that this is okay. Pretty- I mean, it just seems like a fundamental aspect of due process rights, a defendant can make a meaningful choice in who's representing them. I mean, I don't understand. Like, how do you argue that it's okay? Is the argument that, well, the suspension was kind of an administrative thing? It's not like he's not a competent attorney. It was a financial. I mean, is that it?
Dissent says, even still, acknowledging all this, Woodbury, the attorney's candor, should not matter because the tribunal did not suspend Woodbury's license as to Richardson. Woodbury was not required to inform Richardson of his suspension because it did not apply to the case. I'd want to know if my attorney is commingling funds and doing things detrimental to the administration of justice. Is that just me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that, hello, if nothing else, is character evidence, I would say, of how this guy operates. But also, it should be the defendant's right to make that decision. Maybe the defendant can look at it and say, I don't care. It's not a big deal to me because that has nothing to do with what's happening here. Like, I have a relationship with, but he should be, you know, allowed to make an informed, meaningful decision in this, in his own representation. So, when you said earlier that the Supreme Court already said it was okay, what did you mean by that? Maybe I missed.
They say in the dissent says the Supreme Court has authority to allow a suspended attorney to still handle cases.
Yes, but that doesn't go to whether or not the defendants made aware of it.
And I think is the big point of the majority is sure the Supreme Court can do that, but you have to give informed consent. And here, Mr. Richardson had no idea that his attorney had been suspended.
Okay, if the Supreme Court can do that, do we know if there's any requirement that can only happen with the consent of who they're representing? Like, that's,
there's not authority, which is why we have but with the majority of the dissent is it's an unresolved issue, and the majority is saying clearly part of that is you have to tell the client, and the dissent is saying
obviously.
They just thought they were going to sneak that on by, and no one was going to pick up on it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of wild to me. And so, I don't know what to expect because there's still the standard ground issue. So the Supreme Court could still find he didn't need to have knowledge, but still the lack of the standard ground instruction. But I fully expect the Supreme Court in Mississippi to take this case up.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Wow. you people have no idea the things that lawyers can actually get away with. That is true.
I mean, it just seems like so straightforward. Like, of course we have to tell him, you know, he's our client. Like, it just seems so basic.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's a rabbit hole you want to go down, you can go down. I mean, like, part of the issue is, like, you know, a lot of complaints that are made against attorneys, they're under seal. No, but the public can never have access to them. Those complaints don't necessarily mean that person's going to be disbarred. You might not ever know that your attorney or this person you're considering to represent you has a history of all kinds of complaints or misconduct or allegations, at least. It's, to me, as frustrating as, like, Maryland's police Bill of Rights, where you can't get access to maybe a police officer's history of misconduct with the public. Anyway. All right. Mita, you want to go next or I can go next? What would you like to do?
I can go next.
All right.
So I want to talk about a wild case out of Philadelphia that actually one of our listeners mentioned in our Facebook community.
Oh, God. Yes. Okay.
P.S. If you're not a member, what are you waiting for? Answer the questions and we'll let you in.
Yeah.
So yeah, this case has been going on since about early June when authorities arrested a man by the name of Eugene Horsch in downtown Philly. Colin, have you heard about this case?
I haven't, no.
Okay. So a park ranger noticed that Eugene's BMW was parked illegally next to a fire hydrant. And as he approached the car, and he was acting a little suspicious, so he approaches the car and he hears a woman in the car saying, quote, "You're going to hurt me." So he, you know, pulls up, asks them for their IDs. Come to find out, Eugene has a record, and the female passenger that was with him, when her license was run, they realized that it was a fake. It had her picture on it, but the name that was on there was Blair Tonzelli, who is a woman that had been reported missing since 2023. Obviously, they ended up searching his vehicle and found all kinds of stuff, illegal firearms, narcotics, a cattle prod, and counterfeit FBI and DEA credentials. So that bounty of discovery obviously led the police to be able to execute nearly 100 search warrants on Eugene's house. And it's being called the House of Horrors for very good reasons. While conducting the search, authorities seized hard drives in the house, hundreds of thousands of digital images and videos, including a video that clearly shows a woman actively being killed.
Wow.
Yeah. Multiple urns were taken from the property, zip ties, weapons. They discovered a marijuana grow lab. Federal agents even found a handwritten letter that detailed a methodology for physically hurting people, and it referenced Ted Bundy. It wasn't signed, so not sure who wrote it, but I assume they'll figure that out soon enough. And if that's not disturbing enough, let's talk about some women that have been linked to the house. Gabrielle Amarando disappeared in 2012 and appears deceased in one of the digital files that were recovered from the house. Maribel Frisses disappeared in 2018, also on a digital file that was recovered, who appears to be deceased. Blair Tonzelli, the name of the female passenger in the car with Eugene, she has been missing since February 2023, but it's confirmed that she was last seen at the house in 2022. And then the last woman, Aiming McHale, vanished in 2016, last seen at the house. She was Raymond Horsch's ex-wife. Raymond is Eugene's father.
Mm.
He died last May. Now, both father and son had been living in this house together for at least a decade.
And by the way, the pictures I'm seeing, this is not a house out in the rural. I mean, like, this is, it's a house surrounded by houses. It's a neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a row house. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a row house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The father, Raymond, was an erotic author and filmmaker, which is a very nice way of saying he self-published books and journals that detailed the process of strangling women and dissolving their bodies in chemicals.
Holy crap.
And he filmed porn. Why does that matter? Well, because apparently what he wrote in those books and journals, as well as reports that his son Eugene bragged about melting bodies to, quote, flush down a toilet. The property's sewer lines were torn up by the forensic teams.
Oh my God.
And over 50 containers of unidentified oily substance was sent to federal labs for analysis.
God.
Lots there.
So this is a father-son serial killer team is what you're talking about here?
Potentially, yeah.
Okay.
So fast forward to where we're currently at, right? Eugene is being held without bail in federal custody. So the prosecutors in Philly withdrew the local weapons and drug charges against him so that the feds could have full jurisdiction since their scope would be much broader. And the federal charges include being a felon in possession of a firearm, producing the counterfeit federal credentials, and September 28th, I believe, is when his trial is scheduled to start. No charges of homicide or any other violent offenses just yet, but obviously local authorities are still going through all the evidence, the digital evidence, so there could be more coming. We'll see.
For the last few months, me and my kids have been fighting over an entire shipment of Laureen. Laureen is the gum that we've been chewing all summer that strengthens our tooth enamel. We love the way it tastes. I'm not kidding when I said I got a whole box of it, every flavor imaginable, and me and my kids have been fighting over it all summer. But as great as the gum is, Laureen is now launching something that I'm also really excited about, and that is a nicotine-free pouch. Laureen Co. pouches are pouches that swap out the nicotine and they give you clean focus and support your enamel the whole time they're in. It works like the pouches you've seen before. You tuck one in, you go about your day. Each pouch has 50 milligrams of caffeine, which is about half a cup of coffee, plus L-theanine and alpha GPC for a smooth, steady focus with no energy crash. And because this is Laureen, every pouch also has nano hydroxyapatite. That is the mineral your teeth are made of. So it gives you daily enamel support in between brushings. The new pouches come in mint, cinnamon, and mango, and it's nicotine free as always. I am a huge fan of this idea because you get smooth, consistent energy and focus without any jitters or crash. You're doing something good for your teeth while just sitting in there. And of course, you can pick your favorite flavor and they are all good. Look, every other pouch out there makes you pick between something that helps you focus and something that's actually good for your teeth. This is the only one designed to do both, and it comes from a brand that's leading the way at supporting your oral health. Give Laureen a try. Right now, Laureen Co. is offering our listeners up to 50% off at buylaureen.com/justice. That's buylaureen, LARINE.com/justice for up to 50% off.
Is it weird that they're moving forward on this without first kind of getting a handle on all the dead people?
Well, I mean, I think so. But the thing is, there's so many layers here. So I'm going to take it a little bit back further and talk about, you know, why there's so much public scrutiny around this case, because apparently authorities have been to this house multiple times, many different occasions over the years.
Why? In response to what?
So many things.
Okay.
So why didn't they already discover what was happening in this house, right? There was a narcotics raid previously tied to Eugene. He ended up taking a plea deal and only had 3 years probation as a result of that. Back in 2009, Raymond, the father, was indicted by federal prosecutors in a separate illegal drug manufacturing case. So you've got those two things. The missing reports for the women, there were investigations related to that. That's how they know that these women were last seen in this house. But the question is, did they not do a good enough job? Right. Were they not thorough in their search? Well, the deputy commissioner in Philadelphia, he released a statement at a briefing saying, quote, narcotics had served the warrant and been inside that house previous to this incident. That wasn't the first time we were there. It didn't look like it looked when we went in this summer. It was different. Now,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Different because they had different wallpaper, different right. decor. What are we talking about? I think what he meant by that is in June, when they went into the basement, there was a whole chemical drum set up, which, you know, there was all kinds of like pipes and stuff attached. Basically, it was this concoction built to facilitate wet cremation, meaning chemicals to break down humans so that only liquid remains, which is wild. So maybe, you know, there were no indications of that, but again, I guess they didn't collect digital evidence or what, who knows? And so that's why there's so much uproar about it. Now, obviously, since Raymond is already dead, there's no charges that are going to be filed against him for anything, even if there's proof. Eugene's federal charges, as it stands right now, could result in 20 to 40 years in prison. And obviously, homicide, I would think a minimum of life without parole. But I guess it depends on, you know, what they're actually able to link to him versus him trying to say that was my dad, right?
Yeah.
So
when did the father die?
May 2025.
Oh, so after
so recently.
Yeah. So yeah, that is a defense that could certainly be raised.
Yeah. And so, and he was 80. Eugene is 44. So he's still got time that he can absolutely serve. And hopefully this digital evidence and whatever analysis from the containers that are sent, the forensic stuff, like hopefully something will come of that soon.
There seems to be like kind of a gap between the identified victims or potential victims, but mm-hmm. that means probably there might be many more that we don't know about.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Do we know, were these sex workers? Were they like runaways? Was the, or was it just, you know,
there's
like,
no, it's not specified.
Okay.
No. I mean, except for the one that was the father's ex-wife. Yeah. The other three, not sure. And, you know, they could be sex workers. They could have been kidnapped because again, that was part of the whole, you know, porn film that he was conducting outside of his house, the dad. Who knows? But, you know, today's the 8th. In 20 days, Eugene's trial starts. Mm. So what if there's something that's discovered while the trial is going on that connects him? Do they get to add on charges or like, how would that work?
Colin?
That would be the grand jury clause. The indictment clause says you need to take a charge to a grand jury. And so if they didn't do that, that'd be, you know, it's constructive amendment as an indictment and wouldn't be allowed. And so they would have to, before they could do that, go back to a grand jury and get this whole ball rolling. I don't imagine they would do that. They might get the low hanging fruit first and then get them later on some of these more serious charges.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. I had seen some headlines around it and, it looks like the stuff of nightmares, but look, I mean, I have heard this over and over again, that at any given time, we still have dozens of serial killers, if not more, operating in the United States. It is just shocking that in a row home, that in a home that they could get away with this for so many years.
For me, it harkens back. Have either of you read The Devil in the White City by Eric Larson, which is
long
basically the story of the first serial killer in the U.S. in Chicago,
this the great
guy H.H. Holmes, who had the so-called murder castle, and what Methil's describing sounds like this own version of a murder castle in Philadelphia, which is just, it's insane. But as you said, like, it still exists out there.
Okay. All right. On that note, we will move on to the story that actually it was going to be that story. It was going to be the story. I wasn't sure which one, but this time I went with actually the one I thought that would kind of more up your alley, Mito. But I'll start with, so this is a decision that just came out of the Seventh Circuit on August 26th, but I'm going to go back in time to the underlying facts. And that is this, that in 2024, what happened was Meta Platform reported that somebody had been transmitting potential CSAM, which is child sexual abuse material. And they reported this to the cyber tip line of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Apparently, an Instagram user sent a direct message to another Instagram user. And in that message, there were AI-generated images depicting CSAM, okay? Now, the person that they sent it to, the account they sent it to, belonged to a minor, okay? And then along inside that DM, they had the image, and they explained to the minor how this person created the image. So that man was Stephen Andrig of Wisconsin, who was a software engineer. And what he had done was he had installed something called Stable Diffusion, which is some kind of AI program on his laptop. He added software components that allowed the program to create depictions of realistic human private parts. And then he used curated text prompts and all kinds of things to create photorealistic images of minors in sexually explicit positions. Okay. The government, when they brought these charges in 2024 against Andrig, conceded that the images didn't depict and couldn't be linked to any actual children, right? So the indictment charged Andrig with producing, distributing, and transferring obscene visual depiction of minors and with possessing at least one obscene visual depiction of a minor. Now, the district court dismissed one of the counts. They dismissed the possession count, leaving the production, distribution, and transfer counts intact, okay? Then what the state does is the state's like, well, they appealed that dismissal, and they're like, he should also be charged with the possession count as well. Mm-hmm. And so the Seventh Circuit affirmed dismissing the possession charge, okay? And here's what they said. They said that Judge John Lee wrote that the court was legally bound by past U.S. Supreme Court decisions, even though they were very concerned about how artificial intelligence is obviously outpacing the law. We don't really quite know how to deal with all these things. They relied on two previous precedents. One is Stanley v. Georgia's 1969 case, in which the Supreme Court ruled that individuals have a constitutional right to possess obscene materials in the privacy of their own home. The second decision they relied on was Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition 2002 decision, in which the Supreme Court struck down a ban on virtual child pornography. They struck down a ban on virtual child pornography, ruling that computer-generated images not involving real children are protected by the First Amendment unless they meet specific legal definitions of obscenity. Now, relying on that, the Seventh Circuit said that, you know, basically, Andrig possessing this material was protected activity, but they kept the other charges intact, and so it's going to go back to the district court on those issues. But, you know, what I'm a little bit confused about on all of this, I mean, obviously, you know, advocates are like, well, this is not a great precedent because, first of all, it doesn't seem to make a distinction between virtual images mm-hmm. and images of real children. Right. But also, you know, folks are like, well, it creates kind of like this general kind of like feeling that, oh, it's okay if we possess these things in the privacy of our home. And so it's kind of a confusing decision. I think to me, it's a confusing decision, but I wanted to get back to like the creation aspect of this charge. I understand the distribution yeah. aspect of it. And I understand the, you know, the minor being involved aspect of it. That makes total sense. Yeah, I think they'll get him on that. The creation aspect of it is, I'm surprised that that also wasn't dismissed.
Valvoline Instant Oil Change presents Wisdom from the Road.
Summer means wide open spaces and a whole lot of extra miles. The last place you want your engine to give out is halfway to nowhere. Out here, low oil or a weak battery is just an ambush waiting to happen. That's why every oil change at Valvoline Instant Oil Change includes an 18-point maintenance check. These techs are trained to help spot issues early and keep you riding easy.
Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
Change wisely.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Let me get your first impressions of this, Colin. Are you familiar with this ruling, by the way?
I saw the ruling, yeah. And okay. I think the point you're getting at, and I don't know whether they address this, I haven't read the opinion, is when you have AI, isn't that drawing from actual sources? Meaning for AI to create child pornography, wouldn't that have to rely upon actual underage children in the creation mm-hmm. process? Is that what you're kind of getting at?
Well, yes and no. I mean, okay. I do think I know that real data is used to mm-hmm. train AI, right, in order to create these, but it doesn't necessarily mean an actual, like, you know what I mean? It could be an amalgamation of a thousand different faces.
Right.
It could, you know,
a thousand different underage faces.
Oh, well, yes and no, because Colin, okay. think about the fact that we can take a human, an adult face and do kind of a regression, child regression when we're trying sure. to find missing yeah. people. Right. So we have had the technology to do kind of regression. Yes. So maybe, maybe not. I mean, but the government conceded on this. They're like, we couldn't link us at any children, okay. any real life children to these images. It doesn't mean you know, and I guess it depends on how the software create or generates and the prompts used and stuff, you know what I mean? And the inputs he put into it. Here, that didn't exist. And then I wonder about, like, okay, let's remove AI from this. Maybe, like, a simpler way to think about this is, like, some pervert dude sitting in his home with, like, a notebook and a pencil, just drawing out of his own imagination images of children in sexually compromised positions. How do we look at something like that in relation to this? I mean, if he's doing it in the privacy of his home, maybe he's even imagining a real child that he knows as he's drawing this, right? Isn't it comparable to that? And is that protective activity?
I mean, I think as heinous as that would seem, if he's just drawing it from his own memory or imagination, I think that probably would be protected under the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. The AI, as you said, you know, I don't know the details exactly, but maybe the prosecution saying we couldn't prove it was taken from an actual image of a child. But
yeah, they said we couldn't prove it. Yeah.
And so I guess that is, I mean, it's the tough part because, right, we all want to punish this behavior, but we all want to protect First Amendment rights and almost have them sweep too broadly in a sense. So,
but then how do you, okay, on one hand, the possession, they're dismissing the possession charge. I think that's going to hold. But then how is the creation or production part also not protected then?
I think if he draws it himself, I think that is protected because that's just free expression. He's not distributing it. It's, you know, messed up. But like the AI, I think I would distinguish because I think it would have to come from, I mean, maybe you de-age an adult, but I mean, other than that, if it's drawn from actual children, that would seem to be.
Right. But the government's like, no, yeah. That's we cannot.
But yeah, we don't have that. Not. So
how do you, this is what I'm confused about here. When I say it's a confusing ruling to me, it's confusing that when the government's saying we cannot link this to any real child in the real world, then why does this creation or production charge still exist, or how, and do you think it will, that he can be in fact convicted of that? I don't know. I'm very confused about this ruling.
I mean, I'd like to know, you know, if they like subpoenaed and got information about how this was created, because that's what I'm confused on. And depending upon how it was created, I might have a different take on it. But yeah. It sounds like the prosecution just kind of put up the white flag and said, we don't know, we can't prove it. And so that was that.
But why should it matter whether it's AI generated or a picture of a real child, right? If it's CSAM, it's CSAM. It doesn't matter if it's a pixelated image of a child's face or a real looking, like, why does that matter? The issue is the CSAM, right? Or should be?
Well, I think that's what Rabia mentioned, which is this precedent that says if it is just like a creation that's not drawn, like it's a graphic or virtual that's not created from an actual person, that is protected mm-hmm. under the First Amendment, right, Rabia? That was one of the cases they had cited.
Yeah, virtual child pornography, yeah. Ash conferences,
yeah. Speech. If it's virtual, it's protected, whether we agree or not. And so the difference is this just a computer like creating a rendering, or is it relying upon some actual child or children?
I mean, you don't need to anymore, I think, is the thing. You don't need to. And but so I think
I some listeners might be more acquainted with AI than I am, but I feel like whether it is an adult de-aged or an actual child, I think it does have to draw from actual people, because that's part of the issue in academia is if you're doing AI, it's drawing from other professors' papers. Like it has to draw from some real world source.
Right. Right. It has to be trained somehow. So yeah, I'm not quite sure why the government conceded on that point.
It can even pull from other AI, right? So it doesn't have to be the real
original
child's
sources.
Face off of Instagram. It could be some other AI generated picture of somebody wanting to have a fake family picture. But that's the image they pull and use. It's still the CSAM.
What if a perp used their own childhood picture?
Well, that would certainly violate the law.
Then that's a real image. That's a real child image.
Because that's the whole thing is like, well, child pornography, although there's many issues with it, the big thing is the exploitation of a child who can't consent, getting back to that issue. And so whether it's your own child or someone else's child or AI drawing from an actual child or AI drawing from AI that drew from an actual child, it's the exploitation of that actual child.
Yeah. My concern is, though, obviously, that this feels like a blank check to folks in terms of like obviously this is clearly already a thing. You know what I mean? Like porn has all kinds of different genres and stuff. And I think this is going to be a whole thing now where they're like, fine, it just makes it so much easier. mm-hmm. right? For people who are
going to do it anyways,
who are going to do it. And on one hand, I wonder, well, maybe this will protect children more because now they don't have to actually, victimize actual children. I mean, I'm so confused about this whole thing. I don't know where I land on it.
Well, it gets tough because, right. I mean, then you think about, okay, well, what if someone in their home writes a manifesto about tearing down the government, assassinating certain politicians, et cetera, and they're not disseminating it? Like, again, it's troublesome, but we do have First Amendment rights. And so, like, that's the difficulty here from a public policy perspective, as you say, like, we want to protect these children, but we do have a broad First Amendment. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it's an interesting decision. I'm curious to see how this plays out in district court, where he's going to be tried on the other issues, apparently. Mm. All right. That's all I have. Anything, any updates or anything we need to know, Mithal, on any of your stuff?
I don't think so.
Don't think so. Sure. All right. I think that's it for me too. Thank you guys. And, as Mithal said at the top of the show, please do join our community Facebook group. It's a place where we have a lot of great discussion, but also we like to collect ideas for the stories that you want us to cover there. So that's a great way to stay in touch with this whole crew.
And a lot of what we talk on, like the messages that come through on the Facebook group, like, a lot of that content sometimes ends up on Patreon. So join Patreon if you haven't already
to get the
bonus episodes and all the good stuff. So yeah.
You can do a Patreon for like as low as like a buck a month, I think.
Yep. A dollar is our best friend.
All right. Thank you guys. We'll be back next week with more horrifying news for you. Yay.
Yay.
All right. Bye guys. Have a great week.
Bye.
Before I roll through the credits, I've got a few quick notes. By now, most of you probably know about our Facebook community group. If you haven't joined yet, please go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. But seriously, answer the questions because a bunch of you are still pending since you've only answered 1 or 2. They're easy questions, I promise. In addition to engaging with us through the Facebook group, you can also leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/undisclosed. We always check the messages, and so far, I think we've answered all of them. We also have a Patreon page with 3 different tiers of perks, the lowest one just being $1, which allows us to continue to do this work. Other tiers include bonus episodes, early access to merch, and even joining Rabia in a live true crime Zoom discussion. Just go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Now, onto the real credits. A huge shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production. Thank you to Patrick Cortez and Romero Marquez for our theme music. For anyone new here, you can engage with us online by going to Instagram or Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. We're also on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can always check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you all for your continued support and for supporting all of our sponsors. Until next time.
Valvoline Instant Oil Change presents Wisdom from the Road.
Summer means wide open spaces and a whole lot of extra miles. The last place you want your engine to give out is halfway to nowhere. Out here, low oil or a weak battery is just an ambush waiting to happen. That's why every oil change at Valvoline Instant Oil Change includes an 18-point maintenance check. These techs are trained to help spot issues early and keep you riding easy.
Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
Change wisely.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Real value shows up in reliability you don't have to second guess. Like a set of Firestone all-season tires. They're designed to deliver confidence-inspiring wet weather traction and a quieter ride, no matter the road, season after season. Firestone all-season tires. For durability, you can count on. Just like people count on you. Firestone. Always dependable. Since 1900.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Most dog food brands don't really want you seeing how their food is made. Just Food for Dogs is the opposite. They actually invite you in. You can walk into any of their kitchens and see real human-grade ingredients like chicken, beef, carrots, and peas being prepared right in front of you. It's real food made in real kitchens. Nothing is hidden behind labels. And that kind of transparency says a lot. Nothing to hide, everything to love. Go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.